Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Kyle Tolzman, and you're listening to the Against All Average podcast, episode number 5, the show where business owners and entrepreneurs come to learn the skills and mindset to lead exceptional lives. Today, I am joined by the one and only Jake the Snake Spurley. How you doing, Jake?
Good, Kyle. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good, but I'm a little frazzled right now. I just lost my keys in my wallet. I hope there's a miracle that they show up. Somebody has just been using my credit card, so I just got it stopped. So I'm a little bit frazzled. I'm gonna lean on you a little bit today. Is that all right?
Yeah, dude, I will take the lead because we have some absolute gold with our guest today. We're gonna be dropping some good topics, some good content. It is bound to cheer you up, buddy.
All right. You know, what's really going to try to cheer me up is when the heck is that Elon Musk mobile going into outer space? Are they going to launch that thing?
Well, I mean, we said they were launching today on our last episode and, what was it? 10 minutes beforehand, they shut it down due to, I don't know, Elon Musk tweeting or something. So now they're...
He was too busy tweeting to let the rocket launch?
Too busy tweeting. They said, no more, not today. So, I think it's supposed to happen this weekend, right?
Yeah, I thought it was Saturday. They're going to try to launch again. And then if not Saturday, maybe Sunday. I could be wrong. I wasn't following it too close. But I guess you would want the weather in your favor when you're risking your life to send the first private company manned rocket into the where are they going? International Space Station?
Yeah, that sounds like a good destination point. Yeah,
either there or the moon, right? Isn't that the only places that rockets go these days?
Manned rocket. I mean, I don't know. Dude, we're business people. We're not astronauts. Let's not play around here.
Soon. Once I listen, once I figure out Adobe, I'm gonna start applying for some NASA jobs.
All right, dude, let me know how that works out for you.
All right, let's get the show on the road. I'd like to thank our sponsor. When you need all things digital looking their best, call our friends at FAME. That's F-A-E-M Pro Services. Our friends will give you the above all average treatment with an awesome new website, custom graphics, social media management, and a full line of printing services. FAME, the trusted partner of the Against All Average podcast. All right, folks, in this week's episode, we have someone who has learned more in his short lifetime than most 40, 50, or even 60-year-olds. Tavin Boynton is a graduate of Cal Poly San Luis Obispo and co-founder of Bolt About, an electric bicycle company that has contributed to the savings of 1 million pounds of carbon emissions by their customers. Tavin, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for jumping on. We're super thrilled about your story, your experiences, what you, I've went through down in Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. Just for the record, that's a handful, and I'm going to get that screwed up a couple of times.
Oh yeah, we call it but, slow.
We call it slow.
I'm down with that. Like I can remember slow, but if I have to say San Luis Obispo one more time, I'm leaving.
Yep.
I'm heading out.
Slow. Peace out, Kyle. But no, this is great. I guess carbon emissions and being better for the environment, such a big topic right now. And we're going to dig way deeper into kind of Bolt About. But before we get there, tell us a bit about your background. Where did you come from? How did you get to slow, whatever you want to call it? Yeah. And kind of your college experience.
Totally. So I grew up in St. Helens, a little town in Oregon. Let's see, my sophomore year of high school, I got this little postcard in the mail from an art school in California called CCA, California College of the Arts. They're a couple miles away from Berkeley. And the postcard was for this pre-college program. You would take college classes, you would live in the dorm, you would get a taste of college life. And I was like, whoa, I'm going to apply for this. And the graphic design program sounded super interesting. So I applied and I got in. And I spent my summer down in Oakland, and that was amazing. And I met all these people from all around the world. And I was like, all right, I'm going back to my senior of high school, but when I come back, I'm going to live in California. I'm going to go to school here. So I got back, and then I was all in college mode, so applied to a bunch of schools. And then I had some options. I got into 5 schools. So it came down between UC Davis and Cal Poly. And UC Davis is near Sacramento and it's super hot and it's awesome weather. But it's very flat, and SLO is rolling hills surrounded by the ocean. So we're about 10 miles away from the ocean. Tons of mountain biking, hiking, backpacking, that sort of thing. We also have the ocean about 10 minutes away. So surfing, kayaking, all that. So it's like great for the outdoors. So spring of my senior year, did a little road trip and I fell in love when I got a SLO. So I accepted that offer, and 4 years of that was incredible. I loved every minute of it. And then now I've lived in SLO for 6 years. It was rated as happiest city in the US by Oprah. Nice. It's quite a place. A lot of people retire there, so there's not a lot of college grad aged people, but there's a lot of college kids and there's a lot of retired people. That's a great place.
Awesome. Awesome. Seems like that was a great decision you made going to SLO. Yeah. I guess. So what did you major in down there?
Graphic design. It was a more technical program. So we learned to code, and we learned some business skills as well.
Yeah. So how, I guess you started a business in college, right? Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that was Bolt About.
Yes.
So how did this, you know, you're there for graphic design, all this technical stuff, and then you and some buddies, I'm going to assume, mm-hmm. go into bikes. Like how did this kind of transform into that?
Yeah. So, in high school, I was like a go-getter and trying to get out of, Oregon to go to college in California. I had to be a go-getter. So when I got to college, I still had that mindset. So I tried to do as many new experiences as I could. And have you guys ever heard of hackathons?
Yeah.
So like
I have
20...
not.
Okay. So, Cal Poly is a really technical school. There's a lot of engineers. And they hold these 24-hour events where they bring together designers, business people, and engineers, and they form teams. And in 24 hours, you have to build an app or a website or a prototype or something. Yeah. So I did one of them, I think it was my freshman year, and it was very intimidating. And I just was thrown into it, and I had never done an app before. We ended up making a game. Remember Temple Run?
It's like, oh yeah, that game was awesome.
So we made a game off of that, but it starred Marshawn Lynch, this football player. And the whole game was he had to chase the Skittles, and then he got power-ups and he would go into whatever Skittle mode. You know this? And we won $1,000 off of that.
What?
It was great.
So oh my gosh.
That was all the courage I needed to go and continue doing these hackathons. So it was jumping into it.
You tell that story, Tavin, it just makes me know we've almost made it, Jake. We've almost made it. Man, anything's possible if you can win a grand from getting Marshawn to chase some Skittles. That is a freaking awesome story.
So that was the first, it was entrepreneurship and I didn't really know it, but I love that I was being around all these people with very different skill sets as my own. And I told myself that I would do every single hackathon after that in college. So I did. And then my junior year came around and I did this thing called Startup Weekend, which was sponsored by Google. And it was like a hackathon, but it was a 3-day event instead of a 1-day event. And it had a more business focus. So kind of to make a long story short, at the end of the event, I got hired by a startup founder. So on Monday, I started this new job. It was a UX design job. And it was for a company that I didn't really have passion for. It was like a gaming company. But that put me in kind of the circle of entrepreneurs. And then I met my business partner about 2 weeks after that. So I quit the first company and joined the second company. And then we started Bolt About.
Got it. So really, I mean, taking that first job was kind of a blessing in disguise. You might not have found your partner if you didn't take it.
Totally. Yeah. I remember I was a junior and I had always heard of people starting startups in California. Like it's kind of a thing. And I was like, well, I kind of missed that. So I was looking for summer internships. But then like literally 2 weeks after that, we started Bolt About, and that summer we did this crazy business accelerator, raised $100,000 that fall. And then we were seniors with a funded startup. So it's possible.
It's possible. And I think that's a very important note that we should hold on here for a second is, you know, you took that job, it was for a gaming thing. You probably weren't even that interested. You just took it. Yeah. It was a job. You're a poor college kid, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. But I think that's such an important topic, right? Of take the job that nobody wants. You know, you never know where it's going to lead you. You know, yes. In your case and so many other cases, people do things, I don't know when, just because they have to have the money or whatever. And it turns into these great things. And I think that's one thing that's so important for listeners is you never know what avenue something's going to take you.
Yeah.
So,
and I hope the listeners were able to hear he was intimidated in the first hackathon. Like he goes in there super green. Like he's sitting next to all these people. I guarantee, like, did they sell out all the Plaid pantries and all the convenience stores, all the Mountain Dew, all the candy bars? Was everybody just ready to crush?
Red Bull sponsored it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But I mean, I have people that are working at Google sitting next to me. I mean, those were the people that were on these teams, and I was a little freshman. So super green.
Jeez. And let me continue on that. And then we'll continue on with your story, Tavin, is that super intimidated, but something inside of you told you, I need to do this. You know, I moved down to California. I chose to go to college in California to better myself, to take a large leap. You wanted to get out of the small town. You wanted to do something special. So you did it. And then afterwards, you basically just told yourself, like, this is the direction. These are the things that I must do in order to be great. And so you said to yourself, I will never miss one of the hackathons again. And I think that's super important for our listeners to know. If you have an opportunity, if some window even cracks open a little bit, you have to jump towards it and continue to be next to the people who you want to be. If you have all these folks that are super brilliant coders and are well-versed in startups and they really want to do well, why don't you just hang out with them the entire time? And so I think that's what you did and got a lot of benefit from it. So I want to make sure the listeners understood that is that you worked really hard to get into that network, get into that space in order to give you as many opportunities as possible.
Yeah, definitely. It's all about seeking out opportunities where you can meet really smart people and people that want to work on really innovative projects.
Yeah, that's so, I think that's a great point, Kyle. And that's something that it's hard to do, right? Nobody wants to walk into the hackathon knowing you're a freshman. You don't know absolutely anything about the business world, but you know, some of the best roads we take in life are the hardest ones to start. So that's awesome. Let's kind of continue on here into Bolt About. We touched about it briefly. You know, you meeting your co-founder at a job you didn't want, which is great. Tell us about Bolt About. What is it? And I guess kind of take us from the raising capital stage, how you did that, all the way until where it's at.
Yeah, totally. So my business partner had, well, the funny story is he had an e-commerce company. He was flipping stuff on eBay and Amazon. It started by he had a MacBook Pro, fell out of his car, the screen cracked a little bit. So he sold it on eBay and he actually made money. And he just kind of systematized this. It's called arbitrage. And he would just buy low, sell high. He set up an algorithm that scraped eBay to do the buy low and sell high for him. And he wanted an electric bike. So he looked on eBay and he found an electric bike brand. And this is just how he thinks. He likes to kind of zoom out and take things a step further. So he hit up the manufacturer and said, hey, I want one as a sample. Can I get the wholesale price? And they said, no, you have to buy six. And he said, how about two? And they said, okay. So he bought two, and he didn't know what to do with the other one. So his roommate rented it from him. And then we realized, or he realized, that that could actually be a feasible business, especially in this college town. People wanted a quick way to get a campus. And I don't know if OSU is like this where you went, but Cal Poly, once you're in the university, you can't access it by car. It's only by walking or biking. So you could get a campus faster by a car, but then once you're there, a bike was the way to go. But in our town, there's all these hills. So people, a lot of like the Greek life sort of people, they didn't want to ride a bike because they'd be all sweaty. So the electric bike was something that we could introduce. So once I met him, he said, hey, Tavin, I want to start this with you. And that, again, it was super intimidating because I was a graphic design person. I was not a business thinker.
Right.
But I just carried the same mindset. I wanted to jump into it and make myself uncomfortable. So we have this big event every year at Cal Poly called Open House. And it's where prospective students can come to campus with their parents, see the campus, and see if they want to attend here. So we knew the best place to start our business would be to have a booth at that open house. So we could interview people, get people on the bikes, get people hyped. We partnered with the College of Business, and they gave us an opportunity to present in front of all the prospective business students and their parents. And what we were able to do is we did this really funny presentation where we filmed a video of my business partner's like bike ride to campus on the Boltabout bike. And then we had the video stop, and on the big screen, it stops, and then he rolls in the auditorium on the bike. So it's like he and the crowd went wild. So that was like after 2 weeks of having the idea, we just wanted to validate it. So we didn't have a business, we didn't have a website, we had nothing, but we were able to look like we had a established company. And then, yeah, we had traction. So we, started scaling after that.
So, all right. So take a couple steps back, I guess. Okay. He got this, oh, you have to buy six. Now I'll give you two. They took it. Great negotiation. Love it. But, and then you got this like great opportunity at with the College of Business. You really kicked it off in front of all these freshmen that didn't know anything, and you could brainwash them, and it was awesome. Get them suckered in. But I guess, and then you say we scaled. What does that tangibly mean? Right. Where did this capital come from?
Yeah. So Cal Poly has a really cool business pipeline for startups. They have a lot of companies that have come through Cal Poly and have grown to be very big companies. iFixit was a Cal Poly startup. There's another one, I think they're called like iCracked, and they're like an iPhone repair company. They came through Cal Poly. Yerba Mate, the Goyaki brand, came from Cal Poly. Cliff Bar came through Cal Poly. Wow. So a lot of these like big established companies came through Cal Poly. So they have a really good alumni network that wants to give back, and they want to fund innovative startups. So they have this program. They rent out an office space in downtown SLO, and they run this program to give free office space to students. And I think a lot of universities are starting to do this sort of thing, but they have partnered with the county to give students free startup funding and office space to start their business, to give to businesses a fighting chance. So we applied to this program, and I think like 20 or 30 startups applied and only 7 get in. So it's pretty competitive, but we applied, and it's called a Summer Accelerator. So it's a 13-week program. They bring in business leaders, CEOs, to give us workshops for 13 weeks. At the beginning of the 13 weeks, we get $10,000 to start the company, and it's equity free, and we get a use the money however we want. So we used it to buy 30 bikes, and we used that 30 bikes to get revenue. So then by the end of the 13 weeks, we'd have revenue to show. Some other teams, they bought like ice cream every day with it because it's like, oh, it's a fun money for me and my friends.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, We can use it however we want. At the end of the 13 weeks, we raise investor money. They put on this huge pitch event. They bring in investors, Cal Poly donors to hear the startup's pitch. And pretty much after that night, we raised 60K, and then soon after that, 100K.
Wow.
So we used all that money to buy more bikes, and then we used the bikes to get customers and get revenue.
You're talking about the Cal Poly experience right now. I mean, you should be paid by Cal Poly right now for this interview. This sounds absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
I went to the University of Oregon and wasn't as involved in the university as I could have, whereas Cal Poly is a bit smaller, a little bit of a smaller feel, and really seems like it was an awesome fit for you.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about your mindset? You spoke about, hey, we need to show some revenue after 13 weeks, so I'm going to buy some bikes and start hustling, where some of the other competitors didn't take it as serious as you.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's a direct correlation to this as far as business people in general, as far as mindset goes?
I don't know if I want to make any generalizations, but I knew that in order to get investor money, they want to see traction. And revenue isn't always that big in the beginning for a startup. So we wanted to have a lot of customers. So we needed to take a risk, and we needed to either take on debt or take on equity. So we used that $10,000 to buy bikes. So it was good. It was in capital. And if anything hit the fan, we could all always sell the bikes.
resell them on eBay.
Yeah.
There you go.
But yeah, we were serious about this. And we wanted to show traction so that, we used this 13 weeks to get customer development done and get as many people on the bikes to get. What we were trying to do was get a pre-order list. So we were trying to get 100 bikes on pre-order. That way we could go to manufacturers and say, hey, we have this business. We have traction. We have customers lined up. We need to negotiate good terms with you. And we're looking for a long-term partner.
Right.
So we used that to show that although we were college students, we should be taken seriously with manufacturers.
And so you talked a lot about in those 13 weeks, you had a lot of success.
Yeah.
What was the biggest downside in those 13 weeks? If you went back into day one of this accelerator, what would you do differently and why?
Oh, wow. It was incredible. It was also very intimidating. On the first day, I thought about quitting because I'm not a business student, and it was very intimidating. What would I do differently? I would say we maybe did too much prep work before we launched. We waited 13 weeks to really do a full launch. And we could have done a lot more by just doing our MVP V1, just getting our product out there. So we could have probably had a much bigger next year, because it's a seasonal business. It's a monthly subscription program. So we probably could have had a much bigger first year if we had launched earlier.
And you talk about monthly subscription. Would that be September through June?
Yeah. Yeah, that's how it worked.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Got it. So I guess how were initially, I guess after the 13 weeks, were the students that you kind of talked to from that initial program, were they still super interested? Like what? Like tell me a little bit about after the incubation program. And now you're out on your own. You don't have all these CEOs. It's not this big, intimidating shark pool anymore. Like, how did that go?
Yeah. So we hired a couple of employees. We hired some sales and marketing interns who were students, our same age. And we didn't have that support, but that's okay. We were serious and we were hiring people to help fuel our momentum. We also partner with some professors to offer, like, kids could do their senior project on our startup, and then we would get them for free labor. So we were able to like work it a little bit. But we had momentum. I mean, we had just bought 30 bikes, so we needed a warehouse. So we moved out of that office space and, got a It was like a 1,000 foot warehouse. And then, you know, we're trying to make operations better, do some automation, try to figure out at scale, how do we really do this? We had a student design a bike that would pull a bike so we could deliver the bikes with a bike. So that was kind of innovative. Later, we had to buy a Sprinter van to do it in mass. But, you know, every time you grow your business, every time you double your customer base, it requires different different backend stuff going on.
Right.
So you just got to keep growing.
Got to keep growing. And it sounds like you guys grew to a substantial amount, correct?
Yes. Yeah, we did. So it was seasonal, but every year that we were in business, it was sold out. So we grew to have 200 bikes. And at that time we had 16 employees full time. So that was really cool. And we partnered with the state of California to offer kind of this like cool jobs program where we hired people that were unemployed and looking for work. And California would subsidize it. So they would subsidize half of the employees' pay for 3 months. Very cool. It was our way as a startup to be a little leaner and meaner, but give people an opportunity. So that was really cool.
Talk a little bit about, so you'd sell out, you had 200 bikes. Mm-hmm. What's this cost the average college student for a September through June contract to rent that bicycle? And then I've got another question for you after that, that kind of goes along with college students and bikes.
Okay. So we rented our bikes for $79 a month, and that included maintenance and delivery. It ended up, I talked about numbers being better than your revenue. And once we reached that scale, we realized that, oh crap, this is a business that is losing money. So we had to kind of change our model a little bit at scale to not offer the free maintenance anymore. And then it was profitable again. So we just had to make little changes. $79 a month.
Awesome. Thank you. Just, I think it helps our listeners understand the math a little bit and figure out what your revenue was, kind of what you're working with. And yeah, it's a good amount of money, but yes, you realized really quick that you were going to have to get a little bit leaner. You guys got a little fat and happy and then had to figure out ways in order to make the company profitable. Yeah. The next question is, when you were offering maintenance on these bikes, I know in college, I went through a few bikes. I wrecked a couple bikes. I got bikes stolen. Talk about that. Tell me a little bit about stolen bikes, wrecked bikes, college kids refusing to pay, college kids getting upset because they thought it was your fault. Go into like the headache part of the company.
Oh yeah. I remember during our first 13 week accelerator, we made a list of all the worst things that could happen. And it's not software, like someone's on a bike and they could die. We didn't have anybody die, but we had some scares like what you're talking about. We interviewed some car rental companies to learn how they mitigated the risk, and they offer insurance. And we decided to offer insurance, which is pretty much taking a risk that people paying for the insurance will offset people that get their bike stolen.
Right.
But it wasn't really insurance. It was just us taking that risk. So that helped mitigate it a bit. Also, I mean, you've all seen like the city bikes and those scooters, right? In all the cities.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Opposed to those, because our customers were, it was their bike and they took it home with them, they treated it like their personal property. So that's something that we had over those companies is our bikes didn't have nearly as many damages as those other companies because they had a sense of ownership. So that was interesting. But thefts did happen and damages did happen. Most of the time it was okay. We had, I think, 4 thefts 1 year. And it's in the contract that the customer has to pay for it, for the replacement cost of the bike. So that kind of sucks. And you probably lose a customer. You burn that bridge, but it protects the business.
And I'm sure you guys were super upfront about that when they would check out the bike, exactly what they were accountable for and what they were not.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a good lawyer. So that made it good.
right.
So what I was always hoping that theft would be a really big problem, because we had a couple people from GPS tracking companies reach out to us. And if we had more of a problem, we would have embedded our bikes with GPS and worked with police to track down people. And that would have been cool. But it wasn't that big of a problem, so we never did that.
So you talk about kind of problems and liability.
Yeah.
If there was one, I always say every problem is an opportunity somewhere.
Yeah.
But if looking back, what was the biggest, I guess, failure or biggest problem that you had with Bolt About?
Yeah. So this story is, what the last year of the company has been.
Buckle up, ladies and gentlemen. It's about to get juicy.
Yeah.
It's about to go down.
So in 2018, we had been in business for about 2 years, and we were looking for ways to scale the business. And one of the lowest risk ways we saw to scale was to partner with existing bike stores and have part of their store be for our product. And then we could scale into infinite number of cities all at once. So we found a local bike shop in SLO. It was in the beach town called Avila Beach, right next to us. And they did tourist rentals to tourists, families and such. And after talking with them, they were initially like kind of hesitant to work with us because we were their competitors. But we got to talking with them, and we actually decided at the end of it to partner with them and to merge businesses. So we onboarded their team. We trained their team in kind of our business strategy. And we got them a new retail space, and we invested about $100K in new product for their retail store. Though, we did all this without signing a contract with them that we did any of this.
Oh my gosh.
And my business partner was hoping that would happen naturally. He didn't want to, do anything that would jeopardize the relationship. But ultimately, that was the demise of our whole startup. So without a signed contract, some funky stuff started happening. And soon it was in the winter, it must have been end of 2018, early 2019. And we were really strapped for cash, and we didn't know why, because that business had been doing so well. And we realized that they had been draining all the money out of that account without us knowing it. Wow. So it had reached a little over $100,000 at that point. So thought we had $100,000 in reserves, and we did it. So that was the greatest failure, is trusting them too much, and that leading to not being as skeptical as we needed to be about the relationship.
And Tavin, if you can you go into more detail as far as that winter? You're like, oh crap. So you and your business partner, the original business partner, you guys are on good terms, correct?
Yeah, and we still
are. And you still are. The other side starts slowly draining out like $1,000 at a time type of thing, $2,000 here. You don't really notice it, and you're just trying to make this business as much as it can. Are you a senior in college at that time, or are you a year out?
I was a year out.
Okay. So you're focused more on the business, trying to survive, trying to make it. And this happens.
Yep.
We go into greater detail, please. The listeners are going to love this. Winter.
Yeah.
Goodbye. So, $100,000 and go ahead and talk us through that.
So all of a sudden these people wanted out of the business, and we were like, why? Cause they had seemed so invested and so excited, and why do they want out all of a sudden? So my business partner asked them for all their bank statements and all their transactions. So he downloaded all that. And then we spent the next like 2 weeks on like a sprint of like scraping all the bank statements, trying to figure out what happened, where the money was going. So that was the first step. And then we met with some lawyers and they're like, yeah, you definitely have a case here. So we lawyered up and they advised that we try to negotiate this without lawyers because that would get expensive. I mean, $250 an hour, $350 an hour. It is no joke. So we tried, but it was like it was a game to them. They were not willing to negotiate. I mean, yeah, we have all kind of repressed it in our memories at this point, but that was a dark time. I mean, we were looking at bankruptcy. So we were like, whatever, is it chapter 8 or chapter 11? We were like, how do we survive this? What's the best way to survive this? Because we had a hunch that even if we won in court, we would never get our money back because they would just go bankrupt. Right. And that's what happened. So we lawyered up and we spent the next year fighting it. And they're out of our lives now, but we lost that money and we never got it back.
And tell the listeners, what are you feeling at that time? Like you say, it's a dark time. Are you nervous? Are you anxious? What are you feeling? What does your day look like?
The best way to describe it is we felt like all the walls were closing in on us and there was no good way out. We were all loyal. I mean, that time, it showed us like who wanted to be there for the good of the company and who was there for their own reasons. And then they left. What we did is we held a team meeting, put on a whiteboard all of our monthly expenses, all of our monthly revenue, and just wanted everyone to come together and help us survive that. We had to close. We had two retail stores at this point. We had to close one of those. We had to lay off, I think, only two people, luckily. And we got lean and mean. So we did this chart on a whiteboard. We put all the activities we could do to make, $30,000 in a month. So that's what we needed to do to make, you know, the next month of rent or something. So we put all the activities, percentage of success, how much money they'll give us. And then we were able to see which ones were going to be the most profitable. So we started two new business ventures. So we had a 3,000 square foot warehouse at this time, and we decided to put it up for Craigslist and see if anyone would rent our excess space.
Nice.
Yeah. We got 40 applicants, and we soon rented it out to where we were making money. So we did arbitrage on the warehouse.
There you go.
We got a tenth. We got out of our other store, so that was saving us. I think that was $6,000 a month in rent. We did those two things. And then we also started a business to business electric bike company. So through all this, through the shit storm we were going through, we started two new ventures, the warehouse leasing business and the business to business business, which was we were selling bikes to law enforcement. So we were selling police bikes to law enforcement because they would buy batches of bikes and pay us more than the $79 a month people would. So those things were two bets. But as I said, we got out of our warehouse. So where do we go? So we placed a bet and we got a 10,000 square foot warehouse and we converted half of it into a co-working space. And we spent about a year working on that co-working space and it made $100,000 in 6 months. So that was the project I led. And we got some really cool local companies in there, some venture-backed startups in there. So we were meeting cool people again. And the co-working space was the saving grace. So I guess all in all, I would say that the $100,000 embezzlement caused us to get super scrappy and go into war mode. And we made it out alive. Good came from all of that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's something I was kind of touched on earlier is every problem is an opportunity. And clearly, I don't even know if you would call that what a that a problem. I would call that an absolute, you know, barn burner. Yeah. But opportunities came to that, right? And, you know, different ventures, getting scrappy, getting lean, getting mean. If you could pinpoint one thing, like the biggest opportunity or the biggest thing you learned from it, besides signing on the dotted line, what yep. would that be?
From the embezzlement and that whole situation?
Yeah. Or I mean, you could even continue it into all the other opportunities that it led you. You know, this big problem actually turned into a whole bunch of other opportunity. Like, what was like the biggest takeaway from all that?
Well, I'd say one takeaway is that in peace times, you have time to invest in stuff that doesn't really matter, and you live above your means. And then in war times, you realize that you can't do that. So that's a small thing.
That's gold right there, listeners. Absolute gold. Peacetime, you're just spending money. Everything's good. Once he actually went into the war zone, made sure that he understood every single line of his financial statement, where all of his money was going, things started to get better. So that's an awesome point, Tavin.
And I would say the biggest thing is kind of the culture end. It's all about transparency and being vulnerable and accepting failure. When all of your team is transparent with each other, with their problems and what they're going through, everyone can work together and you can survive anything together. It's when leadership tries to look strong that you have problems, because then people don't want to talk about their problems, and then you get yourself into a hole.
And I think that saying that leadership has to be vulnerable to reach uncharted territories, that's a complete mindset thing. Like, that is a mindset thing in the middle of a colossal, I don't even know, you could call that like your own little pandemic right
there. Yeah.
Right. Talk about how did you get from, oh crap, we're gonna have to file like chapter 11, like it's going down, mm-hmm. to kind of switching your mindset to I don't even know if it's a winning mindset. Maybe it was a survival mindset. How do you switch that mindset so quickly? Because you had to.
So, you know how I said it felt like all the walls were closing in on us?
Yes.
So, we felt like we were already going to fail, so we might as well do anything. Like, it's almost like when nothing mattered, so we might as well go all in and see what happens. Like, we might as well make this a learning opportunity, even if we're going to fail. So we might as well delay the bankruptcy 3 months and see what happens.
Do you think that entrepreneurs have to go through something like that in order to go into war zone?
I think probably. I would say as we were going through this and we started talking to other founders about this, it like created immediate rapport, like that we had gone through something this grappling, because people who work at companies like Salesforce or Oracle, like huge companies, when they're our age at 24, they don't experience things at this level. So the fact that we were 24 years old, able to like go through an embezzlement and bankruptcy and lawsuits, like that is a really high level thing that usually only like senior level people go through at companies. So I think it built rapport with our connections and our mentors.
Thank you for sharing all that, Tavin. I think our listeners, it's really hard to get all of this information. If you're trying to Google, if you Google embezzlement, you'll never get this rich of a story. It's real, it's raw, and you've experienced it at such a young age. Tell the listeners a little bit about what are you up to now? Do we still have the co-working space? Are you still renting bicycles? What are you up to, Tavin?
So COVID killed the co-working space, which is too bad.
that's a direct quote right there.
Yeah, COVID that's all the co-working of the day. In March, things started changing because of co-working. Me and my business partners had sort of already thought about like all doing something else on our own. So I actually in March moved to Europe, and I went off on my own, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. My other business partner never finished school, so he went back to school and he's thinking of becoming a lawyer. He loved the lawsuit stuff. So he's trying to
How fitting.
Yeah. So we're all doing different things, but we're also very close. We still have the electric bike retail store in Avila Beach. That's actually a very profitable business. So we, our team is still running it down there. And it's an employee-owned business, so they're getting the revenue. And then me and my partner, we're kind of out of it, doing our next thing. So we're both in kind of this limbo stage right now, but it's kind of fun. I'm probably going to move to San Diego in a couple of months. I think I'll join a tech company. I want to see what it's like working at a big company. And yeah, so we don't really know what's next, but we're okay with that.
And as we wrap things up here, give yourself a plug as far as where our listeners can find you on social media. If you have any gigs that you would like to promote, this is your chance to promote them. And then we'll wrap up the podcast episode.
Great. Yeah, you can find me on Instagram, LinkedIn. My name's Tavin Boynton. My email is tavinb@gmail.com. And I'm doing a lot of freelance work right now. So I help businesses make more revenue through design. So I'm currently working with a music store in Portland. I last week implemented a reward system for their customers and also a virtual appointment system so their customers can schedule appointments to get product help online. And that's seen a substantial increase in their business revenue. So that's what I do. I do freelance work to help businesses get more revenue through good design.
And is that still at tavinb.com?
Yes.
So tavinb@gmail.com. Is that correct?
Yes.
Awesome. All right, Tavin. Well, thank you so much for being on the Against All Average podcast. I know Jake and I loved it. I can't wait to see what the listeners have to say about this. The amount of information that we've packed inside this podcast is absolutely incredible. You're an incredible young man. I actually taught Tavin's younger brother, Miles. The whole Boynton family holds a special place in my heart. They're all freaking awesome people. So it's just so incredible to have you on the podcast, and can't thank you enough.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. So in order to grow the podcast, we need your help. Please subscribe. Can I even say subscribe these days? Please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform and tell a friend about every episode you find value in. If you liked the episode, please leave us a review on iTunes. And if it is a legit 5-star interview, please give us those 5 stars. You can also find us on Spotify, Google Play, etc. If you could also subscribe to our YouTube channel, Facebook page, and Instagram, that's even better. You can find us at Against All Average on all of these platforms. Another big shout out to Tavin Boynton for dropping absolute gold. Thank you to our sponsor, Fame Pro Services. And with that, we thank you for listening to episode 5 of the Against All Average podcast. We'll see you next time.